quick programming note here. I mentioned a couple times during the podcast that we are going to be talking NASCAR with Chris Durrell at the end of our basketball talk. We had to put that on hold for today. So if you hear us mention NASCAR during the podcast today, just quietly X that out of your brain. We're just going to be talking basketball today. All right, let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, March 10th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to be talking a slightly smaller Friday basketball slate than usual. Only 8 games on tap, which is down. Usually there's 10 or 11 on a Friday. There was a few more on Thursday. So we get a slightly smaller NBA slate here for FanDuel and DraftKings. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings NBA. As you know, if you've been listening to the podcast or if this is your first time with us, we have a free 3-day trial to our projection system that's powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. It'll include MLB when the season comes around, only a few short weeks away. And we also have our base hockey projections as well. It all falls under the same subscription blanket, so you try it out for free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. Think you will be happy with the service? We know we're pleased with what we provide. I think it's one of the best deals you can get in the entire industry, so go check that out, dfsr.com/membership. All right, going to talk Friday in the NBA real quick. I have one word. I just want to get your opinion on this. Nurkic. Yep.
Nurk Dog Millionaire. Yep. Nurk Dog who turned everyone on our site into millionaires last night. Yeah, what can you say? You know, we talked about it on the podcast yesterday. Talked about how it was kind of between him and Alan Williams. Alan Williams wound up being a fine play, thankfully for us. Nurkic wound up being in all of our lineups. So, you know, I think we liked both guys. Sometimes it's nice to play well and run well. So it's definitely a good place to settle up. And it kind of goes to show, too, why you don't always need to be on the chalk.
Yeah, no, Nurkic was right below. I mean, Williams was like 56%, and then Nurkic was 42%. They compromised about 100% of the center play, at least on FanDuel. We had both on DraftKings, so it ended up working out really well. It was a nice night. It was like a good night for NBA. Things kind of just ended up turning out the way you wanted it to. High-scoring games. We got a little bit probably lucky with the overtime, with the having a lot
Bite
of exposure.
Your time. That was all skill, dude.
With a heavy exposure to that, mostly just the Blazers side of the ball, to get OT there and get and bleed a few more points out of guys like McCollum and Lillard, who, you know, Nurkic soaked up most of all the points that you were getting fantasy wise for the Blazers. So to get a few extra minutes in overtime for the guards was definitely helpful. But overall, a good night. Ready to keep the fun going here for Friday. This podcast today is mostly gonna, and I wrote the picks last night, and this was kind of the theme, was it's sort of an if this then that scenario that we just don't have all the information here. It's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, so we're devoid of some injury information, and unfortunately, or you know, fortunately for when it comes out later, that information is going to cascade through pretty much all of the lineups tonight. So we'll touch on what those things are, but if it's going to be hard outside of a few plays to be completely definitive about what the overall maybe like cash game or even tournament strategy is going to be tonight, because there's some big names that have question marks on their injury tags right now, and we'll get to that for sure. First game is Orlando and Charlotte. I didn't necessarily want to do this, but I ended up writing up all 5 Magic starters. And so in the old, like, hey, there's 8 games. You know what you should do? Just play all 5 guys from this one team that stinks.
That should do
so,
it.
But you're kind of in this situation with Orlando where they've had mostly with Vucevic being out. So right, so that's the first piece of relevant injury news is whether or not he's going to play. I do not think he's going to play. He's questionable right now. He's been ruled out really quickly in the last couple games. The Magic, I seem to remember having done this in the past. Like, I feel like there was a time where Vucevic was like questionable for like a month straight and just didn't play. Like, they just never they never completely ruled him out. That was like 2 years ago, I think, but not necessarily a 1-to-1 comp. But I do not think he is going to play tonight. Do you agree with me that with him out and the new way that the Magic are sort of like have become just a little more stable with their minutes, that the prices just simply haven't caught up really for all 5 starters?
Yeah, I do. I think Biombo, and I'll get your opinion on Biombo in a second too, but Biombo, Gordon, all these guys, like they're just they're already, I think the key here, and we've talked about this in punts in the past, is that they're all already kind of on the borderline, right? Like, you know, Gordon's a guy that people will play even when Vooch is okay. You know, Biombo, he's one of these guys when he plays 20, 25 minutes a game, he just provides a pretty steady diet of points per dollar performance, even if that wasn't the case last game. So yeah, you have Evan Fournier is kind of the same way. So you have this relatively solid core in terms of points per dollar production, and then you take one of the biggest, you know, most heavily featured guys out of the lineup, and you just got a lot of space to wiggle. So yeah, I don't disagree at all with writing all these guys up. I think obviously Elfrid Payton, he's now scored 100 fantasy points over his last two games. He's going to be a heavily owned player as well. So yeah, a lot of good options here.
122.25 to be exact. That's how many points he's averaging, about 60 fantasy points a game over his last two. I think I'm looking at DraftKings, sorry, 72 and 50. He gets those double bonuses and whatnot. But with Payton, I think you're going to see him end up being a chalk play. It's going to be almost impossible to look at those recent game logs and not want to play him at 7,000. I generally agree with it. If you think that 34 to 35 minutes is going to be what Vogel does, you know, is willing to play him, then 7,000 for him in this matchup is just totally fine. The problem with him is that's just not, he just, they clearly don't want to always play him a ton of minutes, right? Like, he's had just a long sample size now, a huge sample size of just all over minutes. Doesn't matter if he starts, come off the bench. That's my only real concern with him, but you can't argue. The guy's just triple-doubled in the last two games. So I do think you see Payton as a chalk play. I think Ross is still coming really cheap on FanDuel and he shoots enough. The Biombo thing, I think the last game was an outlier for him. He was bad against Chicago, but I think that was just sort of just bad luck. He played a ton of minutes, and they're going to have to play him a ton of minutes without Vooch. So I think in the end, playing three to four of these guys is probably just fine considering the price. I'm mostly talking about FanDuel. DraftKings has corrected the prices on a lot of these guys to the point where I'm not sure you're getting crazy great value on them there. But on FanDuel, the price is just haven't moved. I mean, like Terrence Ross, I know he hasn't like necessarily paid the price, but he's playing like 33 minutes and this price is just stuck at 4,500. Do you think there's any I'm not saying that
somebody hardwired a sell in somewhere and it's supposed to be updating with an algorithm a long time, but someone was like, ah, damn it, I just gotta, all right, whatever, Terrence Ross 4,500, and they just forgot. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Yeah, it's like primary keys broken, so it's just stuck on 4,500.
It's just the same price. Like, everybody's price moves a little bit. He's been 4,500 for like five games in a row. It's totally unreal.
So anyway, that's kind of the overall thoughts here on the Magic. Maybe five guys in the write-ups was overdoing it, but then on a slate where there wasn't just tons and tons of cheaper value jumping out to me, those guys just almost just represented the cheaper value, and that's and I think that's where we kind of stand with the Magic.
Yeah.
On the Charlotte side of the ball, Kaminsky's still out. We've seen a clear sort of one-to-one what happens when Kaminsky doesn't play, and that is Marvin Williams and Cody Zeller play a ton. Then they, just because they, when you lose one of your only big bodies and now you're left with only two other big bodies and they traded away some of their other guys like Hawes and Hibbert, they're really just left with no real other options to play at the four and the five. Zeller is coming off of a game where he played, I believe he played something like 40 minutes. I'll look that up real quick. Marvin Williams is always touching up against 40 minutes. Do you see both of those guys as safe here?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the Marvin Williams thing is kind of a puzzle to me at this point, just because it's like, I'm going to call him a known commodity in this current situation. And, right, you know, 3% start his last time around, just went out there and put up, you know, just another 36, almost the exact same line. Actually, yeah, it was legit the exact same line from the Denver game, 14, 12, and 3. This time he had three blocks and three turnovers instead of two and one. But yeah, it's a 6X on the price. I think he's a very solid play. Worth noting that, you know, Orlando, they're not necessarily undersized when Vooch goes out because Biombo's arguably a better defender. But, you know, having Gordon at the four, I think it's a totally fine matchup for Williams, and I think he pays off pretty easily here, assuming that his role stays the same.
Yeah, I wrote that actually about Zeller in the sense that, you know, I wrote Biombo and Zeller up at center because mostly it was, well, if Biombo doesn't play, so if Biombo plays, I'm pretty much fine playing him in cash, although Mason Plumlee becomes interesting if Jokic is out. So that's just another piece of the injury news. But let's say Jokic plays and Vucevic plays. Well, Zeller simultaneously is helped by the Vucevic news by, one, clearing Biombo off the books, and two, getting a much worse defensive center coming out there for Orlando with Vucevic than it is for Biombo. So you kind of just get like this perfect scenario where if that happens, you can just slot the one in over the other. I know they're not exactly the same price, but they're pretty close. I'll take that back. They're $4,900 on FanDuel, $51. So they're basically the same price on FanDuel, Zeller, and Biombo, and it's maybe like almost a one-to-one swap considering they're playing against each other, and you'd much rather have Zeller facing not Biombo than on the defensive end. So I also like Kemba Walker here. He's been playing very well of late. People make a big deal. What do you think about? So there's like some sample size. It's not huge. Excuse me. The course of his career, it's not a huge disparity. But there have been times where Walker has played much better at home than he has on the road. How much do you make of that in terms of like people like, oh, I can't play Walker on the road, but when he's at home, you got to play him. Does that factor in at all for you?
No, not usually. I mean, I think it kind of reminds me of the clutch argument in baseball, which is to say there probably are players who are just going to be better at home than on the road, but chances are good we won't actually know who they are from a predictive sense, you know, like maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Basketball does tend to be a relatively low variance sport, so you know, maybe there's just something about his process and how he adjusts and what bed he sleeps in or whatever, like maybe there's something to that. But I do think that overall I just don't pay too much attention to it. You know, I would guess that there's probably are, you know, again, like a little outlier cases where certain players get certain calls more at home, and maybe Walker's game lends itself to that a little bit more than whatever else. But yeah, I can't get myself wrapped up in that because it's such an edge case and there are so many more valuable things to be focusing on that even if it does happen to be true for Walker, it's not going to move his projection by 10%, you know. It's going to move his projection by, you know, a fraction of a 1 or 2%, and that's just not worth my time.
I think some people get that stuck in their heads too. There's certain guys where just that conversation crops up more than others, like Klay Thompson shooting at home and like John Wall for a while. That people have viewed him like that at home, although I've heard less about that. And that whatever
shooting
I start
percentage,
hearing,
I would guess shooting percentage is a complete aberration. I would be really shocked if that was a thing that played out in the long run. But
yeah, I tend to agree. It's something that comes up. So tonight that's the 7 o'clock game. This one other issue we have with tonight's slate is that we get one 7 o'clock game and then nothing else till 8, and that's always. It's always a little bit weird with injury stuff because just to leave an hour lead time. So we'll have the Vooch news, no problem there. But everything else, we're just going to have to wait minimum an hour to get injury news. And that could cause some question marks leading into the 7 o'clock lineup lock where you just are stuck wondering on these really questionable guys. One of those situations could be Chicago. And now Dwayne Wade thinks he's going to play, or it says that he's probable to play. So I'm going to take that at its word that he's going to be out there tonight, which lowers some of the expectation we had on a guy like Jimmy Butler, who gets a huge boost. I'm not sure what that does to Chicago here in terms of when Wade plays, it feels like kind of everyone just ends up falling in the middle. And then on the Houston side of the ball, we're waiting on the Ryan Anderson news with if he's going to play or not and how that affects guys like Aaron Gordon. James Harden is expensive. The matchup is not fantastic from a DFS point of view, but also there just aren't a ton of other real expensive guys to play that you can even play tonight. So you have Harden at 11.8. The next, I'm talking about FanDuel pricing. Then you have Giannis at 11.1, and then Wall down at 10.7. Do you think it ends up being that just sort of the raw point and you're not getting great points per dollar value on any of these guys, by the way. Do you think it ends up being like Harden ends up just becoming coming like a chalky play just because you can just simply fit the salary, if that makes sense?
No, yeah. I mean, we talk about this from time to time as well, but tonight, I mean, we already talked about, we listed something like 9 players from the Orlando-Charlotte game, many of whom are under 6,000. So yeah, there's going to be some money to go around, especially on FanDuel tonight. And basically what you're getting is just volume. You know, it's like, well, it doesn't do you any better to get Isaiah Thomas at a 5x points per dollar multiplier if you are going to have $1,000 left over, right? At that point, you just play Curry and take the extra 2 points, but you know, 2 points is better than no points. So that could be a situation tonight. Yeah, I do think Harden's reasonable. I mean, he's tough. It's tough for him to be a terrible play on any given night just because the usage and the time of possession is just so insane. That being said, like, again, another thing we've talked about, we debated actually playing him against Utah in this last matchup. Getting 49 fantasy points on a $12,000 salary is basically an unmitigated disaster. Like, getting 4x on 20% of your salary on FanDuel these days, given how much, you know, less aggressively guys are priced, is just really hard. So I don't know that he'll replicate that performance. Utah, a considerably worse matchup, but he's not a guy I would be like, you know, someone in the chat inevitably tonight is going to be like, we got to play Hart or we got to play somebody, right? So he's not the guy I'm going to lock in on.
Now, the I do think that if Ryan Anderson were out to play, he's questionable right now. If Anderson sat again, I love playing Eric Gordon. Gordon played a ton of minutes. I think he pushed up against 40 last game in the starting lineup. That would probably be the case again. It's nice when you get. It's always funny when you swap a power forward for a shooting guard in terms of the lineup. But Houston's pretty versatile like that, where they can just shift Ariza up to the four and play a guy like Gordon along with Beverly and Harden. They're just like that kind of just run and gun team now. But Gordon's still coming very cheap on both sides. If Anderson were to sit, I would see him as pretty much a lock for cash games. But we're gonna have to wait on that news, and there's a chance we just don't have it leading in to 8 o'clock. And like I said, on the Chicago side, Wade and Butler, they play those guys pretty solid minutes, and everyone else is just kind of, I don't even know what to do with the rest of that team. They I don't think they know what they're doing. I don't think they care. I think those guys are good for like 35 to 37 minutes, for obviously more for Butler. And after that, it's just kind of a smattering, a poo-poo platter of guys who stink, like the Rondos and the Michael Carter Williams, Jerry and Grant. I'm running out of point guards they have. Oh, Cameron Payne. I don't know. They're a mess of a team. Forget it. I'm not really looking that direction at all. Though, do you think the Houston only -5 against Chicago seems low? Does that strike you as low or just fair and we don't really...
It strikes me a little low, but it's the home road thing, I think, on some level. So I think that plays some role in it. But yeah, it does strike me as a little low. Not that I would want to give any gambling advice. I will say that this game does have the highest total on the day. So, it's probably not worth trying to fade altogether. But, it's kind of interesting. We talked about in Orlando how there was just enough opportunity to go around. The guys were just enough underpriced that it makes most of the guys good plays. It's kind of the opposite effect in this game where, like a lot of guys like Jimmy Butler or, even James Harden, they're making up a lot of the production here, but not at a very good price. So even if the game has the highest total, it just might not work out. It probably also has the highest total salary or something. So I'm not sure it's necessarily where you want to be just on that basis alone.
Toronto takes on Atlanta in Atlanta. Damari Carroll sat out last game and PJ Tucker played a ton. I'm not sure I'd want to go really any direction here with Toronto. Atlanta's a very difficult DFS matchup. They're very good on defense. They don't play particularly fast. This game has a low total. Toronto's side of the ball just doesn't seem... DeMar DeRozan's price has come up without Lowry, but you're just getting such a bad matchup here against Atlanta. The Atlanta side, though, a guy like Millsap, it's weird with them. They all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but I would say over the last month, they've just said, all right, Paul, you're just going to be our 37 to 39 minute a game guy. For a guy like him who, he can score and he's not going to score you 60 fantasy points, right? That's not how he's made. It's just not how he plays. It really just doesn't score enough to really hit that kind of price. But
he scored 69 fantasy points against the Knicks in January, just so you know. He played 60 minutes in that game.
Oh, gotcha. I was going to say, wait a second here. I was scrolling back through the game log. I was all right, that was that four overtime game. Right, so it took it took him a whole other game to get there. He basically played a whole other game in overtime. But if he's just going to play 37 to 38 minutes against a Toronto team that is, they're clearly better on defense, especially at the four with Ibaka than, who they're the Pattersons and the, Nguera's and other guys that were running out there before. But in an Eastern Conference matchup game, it's supposed to be close. Do you see Millsap as a safer commodity considering just the amount of minutes he's playing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, basically Millsap this season is almost a strict point fantasy point per minute guy. His minutes are up, like you mentioned, up almost two whole minutes from last season. And yeah, if he's going to play 37, 38 minutes, he's going to get you 38, 37 fantasy points. And that could be okay. It's not going to win you any GPPs, to your point. It's not even necessarily good for cash games if the cash game line gets out of hand. But right. I do think that given all the other payoffs you have, we're talking about Westbrook or Harden rather, and some of these other guys who, we're penciling in for 4.5 points per dollar multiplier, filling up 8,000 of your salary on just under a hair under 5X is an excellent value. So I'd be totally comfortable playing him even with matchup considerations and anything else.
Yeah, the other guy to consider here, I think, is Dennis Schroeder. He's played, after a little bit of a coach falling out, he only played 23 minutes against Golden State. And there was some talk of him and Coach Bud just really not getting along, butting heads. He did go out and play 36 minutes against Brooklyn and kind of crushed it. I'm probably a little low on his minutes right now at 32, but whenever you get a guy that will just randomly play these lower minutes and there's a possibility, even an inkling, it's because the coach isn't really happy with the performance, that does worry me a little bit. He kind of falls into that Elfrid Payton camp for me, where I just like can't totally trust that he's going to be like that he's just the guy. Do you see those, like, do you see from that perspective of like the minutes uncertainty, like are those guys comps for you, or is like Schrader just safer than Payton, if that makes sense?
And I think Schrader's just worse, kind of. You know, the thing about Payton is he's at least showing us that if he plays those minutes, he's got this insane upside. Schrader just doesn't have that. Like, sure, he's relatively solid, but if you just look at his game log since the All-Star break, he has been a disappointment on this price in all but two games. And so is that really where you want to be at 7,100? And you have the minutes concerns to go with it? Like, yeah, he's reasonable on a points per dollar basis, but his bigger games were also in just legit the best possible matchups you can imagine, primarily Brooklyn. So, you know, given that the matchup can't be as good as that, and in fact, it's quite a great deal worse, I'm just not going to be playing Schrader tonight.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's nice that they're the same price because you can kind of compare them. Actually, tell everyone about No Halftime real quick, and then I have a No Halftime challenge. It is not going to be Schrader versus Payton.
All right, so NoHalftime.com is a fantasy sports app that I'm not going to call them new anymore, Doug. They've been around the block for, you know, quite some time now, and that's really saying something in an industry where people are constantly coming and going, some of questionable ethics and all that sort of thing. No Halftime stands above that. You know, they're really good guys over there, David and his team, and they've been sponsored for DFSR for quite some time, and they're actually offering a really innovative fantasy product that I'm surprised more people haven't tried to pick up on. So what you can do on No Halftime is you choose a player that you think is going to have a good night, and then you basically make a challenge to the world that you think that player is going to be better than some other player. So maybe you think Elfrid Payton's going to be better than Dennis Schroeder, and you hope that some Hawks fan wants to jump on the sword and take the challenge. But yep, there's going to be hundreds of challenges on No Halftime that you can also go and surf around and see if there's any good value lying around. App I really enjoy. And beyond that, I think it's just good, easy money for the most part. So NoHalftime.com, use promo code DFSR25, get a $25 bonus up to the first $25 you deposit. So what's your No Halftime challenge that you're sitting on?
Well, I was mentioning Millsap before, and then another guy right around the same range of him is Draymond Green at 8,000. If you had to choose, Green's facing against Minnesota, we're going to talk about them in a minute. But if you had to choose between those two guys, who I see, they're kind of like comps in terms of the way they score points. But if Millsap against Toronto or Green against Minnesota?
Oh, that's awfully close. Yeah, geez, I think I'll lean toward Millsap. I think they are very, very close here, but I think Green actually has a lot of the uncertainty question marks that some of the other guys we've mentioned have. I know the line in that game also -5. It's just like tight spread night or something. I don't really get that either, but yeah, I think there is some blowout risk, or there's certainly much more blowout risk in that game from my perspective than in the Atlanta-Toronto game. So I'll give Millsap the slight edge on that basis.
Yeah, I think I would too. To be fair, like, we probably wouldn't throw that No Halftime challenge out, but I just like to get, sometimes in DFS, for most of our considerations here, we're going to be looking at prices and trying to fit some and fit players in that are around the same expectation. And that, to me, that strikes me as one of those probably closer decisions on tonight.
People are going to be making that decision tonight, no doubt about it.
100%. Milwaukee and Indiana. Oh, man, I'll never in my life get the Indianapolis thing right. I can't. It's in my head now. It's like when someone gives you the wrong name. You know, it's like, you know, I'm totally blanking here because I'm just.
Who's giving you the wrong name?
No. It's like when someone's like, oh, I'm Karen, and then you just like for some reason get in your head that it's Karen, and then you just can't remember what they originally said, and now it's like Karen or Karen for the rest of your life, and then you can't figure it out because you don't see them enough. Anyway, Milwaukee and Indiana, Giannis is coming off a huge game, basically his best game since Jabari Parker went down. What we had seen from him since Parker went down was that. A couple things that happened. One, his usage had gone down, but that also coincided a little bit with Chris Middleton coming back. So it was hard to know what exactly the truth was for the Bucks, because basically the exact like game or two where Middleton came back is where Parker got hurt. So we never got a real clear idea of what the Bucks' like new offensive plan was going to be, basically adding their second best player back into the lineup, right? And so Giannis's production had been down. Then against the Knicks, he played 41 minutes, shot 21 times, which doubled up the next. That's not true. Greg Monroe took 14 shots, but basically doubled up anyone else on the team. Went for 32, 13, bunch of assists, tons of defensive stuff going on. What is like the reality with Giannis? Like, on the one hand, I think people are going to play him because they're going to look at that last game and be like, he's back, or he's like got it sorted out, or they're figuring it out. At the same time, I'm like, well, he's not a favorite to get 41 minutes again. They still have Middleton, who they actually played less because the game was getting out of hand. They just didn't need to play him. Like, what is the story with Giannis, and how do we evaluate like the reality of the situation with him and Middleton playing rather than he and Parker playing?
Yeah, so I think the reality of the situation with Giannis is he's going to occasionally be good enough to pay this price, and frequently he's not. I think he's going to pay this price in really good matchups, but yeah, adding another guy, you know, just takes 13 shots a game to the mix. And, you know, not only that, also spends a reasonable amount of time on ball. That's going to take away from Giannis's production. You know, I mean, we saw a dramatic increase for Giannis basically across the board this season, which also begs a decent question, which is that even sustainable? You know, I know he's only 23 years old, but it's not easy to add, you know, add three shots, increase your field goal percentage while adding a rebound, while adding more assists, while adding, you know, steals right. and blocks. Like, at some point, he's either turning into this blossoming superstar, which he probably is, but the reality of the situation could be that even if he's taking a step up, it's not quite that dramatic a step. The problem is that he's priced like one of the top five fantasy players in the league. So will he be that going forward? It's certainly a reasonable question, and there's a chance that he will be. I'll tell you that if you look at his last basically 15 or 20 games, you have something like five games where you'd be really happy with him on this price. And since the most recent game was one of those games, that obviously has a little bit more weight. But nah, I think if he's going to play like the 35 to 36 minutes I suspect he'll play, then I don't really, this isn't exactly where I want to be for tonight.
Yeah, and it helps too. Well, it helps in the decision-making. Like, so they play the same position on FanDuel. I don't think either one is actually a shooting guard, but they're both listed as shooting guard on FanDuel. But, you know, Harden's only 700 more. And the floor on Harden seems so much higher than Giannis.
I agree completely.
And I know 700 with $700 difference, you're making another decision somewhere else down the line. Obviously, it's not just a total one-to-one, but it's close enough at those prices that I'd rather figure out something else down the line on a cheaper guy and just get the 700 to pay for Harden if I knew I was going to spend in this spot, basically. Then, because I don't see them as even particularly close. The pricing difference is much different for them on DraftKings, where it's a $1,500 difference. So, you know, the decision there is not as close, and I'm not sure you play really either of them over there. But on FanDuel, where the pricing is soft and you're going to get some cheap guys, I'd figure out a way to get Harden into that lineup over Giannis. The rest of the Bucks is kind of, you know, Middleton didn't play as many minutes. His price has come up. I do think you probably see his minutes continue to trend in the right direction, though. I mean, do you agree with me that it's hard to imagine him like just starting to play like 36 minutes going forward, like coming off the injury,
doing that reliably? I think that he will settle back into kind of his normal rotation, which is around 34, 35 minutes at some point, but he's not there yet. And so, you know, again, this is a very aggressive price for a guy who's averaged less than 30 minutes since he returned from injury. So, yeah, 7,000, it's going to need to be a dream matchup. I don't really see it that way tonight. And even in some dream matchup recently, he hasn't got there. So he's not likely to be a guy on a relatively big slate that makes it into my lineups.
He's a guy whose price has come up most likely because, well, one, the performance has been, you know, fine, but also because I know those pricing algorithms factor in ownership. And he's been, like, you know, when we talk about the difference between maybe like him and Terrence Ross and why Ross hasn't moved, you know, Middleton's been 60 to 65% start in the short term in cash games. And eventually, maybe, you know, whatever's fueling the pricing algorithm there, that definitely does factor in. So we've seen his price climb pretty dramatically over, you know, I think like 1,300 over the last week and a half or something like that. And it's right. I mean, he's playing more and he's good. So the price should come up in situations like that. You mentioned the Golden State Minnesota game, the line being low. I suspect this line is built on Golden State's just having some issues without Durant. I mean, they lost at home to the Celtics the other night. They clearly don't have anywhere close to the firepower that they had with him on the court. That stands to reason when you take, you know, the top three best player in the league and replace him with Matt Barnes. Like, that's just going to happen. It's the very definition of going from superstar to below replacement level player. And that's just one of the hardest things in sports to bridge the gap is probably the very hardest thing to do in all sports. When you lose your best player and replace him with the worst, no real team can make that up. And I think that's what's fueling the line here, is that, you know, Golden State was built on this idea of you're going to have one or probably two of the Durant, Curry, Thompson core on the court at Alt and Green. So two of those guys are going to be on the court all the time, all 48 minutes of the game, and that's just not the case anymore. So are you, like, concerned with Golden State's just ability to, A, win games, and B, like, where does that put you – like, where does it put you on these guys now? Like, they go into Minnesota, not a great matchup, but, you know, they're still projected for somewhere, like, around 110 points. Like, where do you see just, like, Golden State in general?
Yeah, I think that we might be heading in a direction where they're kind of – underowned, like, or underappreciated, maybe is a better term there. Yes, I'm not concerned at all about their ability to win games. I think any team is going to have some downtimes, and they definitely got in the habit of leaning on Kevin Durant. But this is a team that set the record for wins last season, minus, you know, Harrison Barnes. If Harrison Barnes was the difference between being arguably the best regular season team of all time and downgrading him to Matt Barnes turned these guys into, like, a below 500 team, which is what they've been in the last few games, right. I would be pretty surprised about that. So, no, I'm not concerned about their ability to win games. I think their ability to produce on their fantasy prices is a much more fair question. And to that effect, Klay Thompson is really the guy who stands out to me as being somewhat underpriced. Now, he's not paid this price reliably recently, but I think a lot, I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but he, I think a lot of that is simply some bad shooting luck. I think he's still getting plenty of great looks and suspect that that will continue. Steph, meanwhile, like, 10,000 was probably too expensive for him last year. It's probably too expensive for him this year, whether Durant's there or not. So, you know, Durant went down. When Durant went down, Curry was a $9,000 player. Now he's $10,000 player. And that's, I think, more than made up the difference in what Durant's usage can account for. So not very high on him, not super high on Draymond, but I do still like Klay quite a bit.
I think this game is an interesting stacking possibility for tournaments, mostly because you're not going to see a lot of these guys show up in cash games for the reasons you just mentioned. They're all just fairly or possibly a little bit overpriced at this point. And that's on the Minnesota side of the ball as well. So, you know, we've talked about this a ton before too, but when guys on Minnesota play reliable minutes every single game, right? Like, every single game, you can just lock Towns, Wiggins, to some degree Deng, though not as much, Rubio. When you can just lock these guys into their minutes, the prices are just going to stabilize into the correct zone. And when you're in the correct zone, that's usually where it's usually a little bit above what's correct. And so just because other guys are on other teams are so variable, so you just aren't really getting any kind of bargain at all on this game. So, but because of that, you're also not going to see the ownership percentages very high, because people aren't going to view them as bargains. So to play this game as a stacking situation, you know, to play like a Towns, a Rubio, and a Curry, and even maybe Draymond, like guys that maybe are correlated enough together where you are going to get, you, there's a possibility that you get some, you know, upside in a shootout. I do like it from that point of view, but from cash, I think you're probably just not getting enough of a deal.
What do you think about Georgie Deng? 37 and 39 minutes in the last two games. We have him projected for a paltry 32 minutes at this moment, but he's paid this price kind of handily in those two games, and this one should be relatively fast-paced with a high total. What are your thoughts on him there?
Yeah, I probably came in a little bit too low on his minutes, evidenced by you just sent me a message that beeped in here that said, what the hell is going on with Georgie Deng's minutes?
That I was supposed use that four letter
that I was supposed that I was supposed to probably raise last night. And I didn't. it's like, so just hitting me on both ends, hitting me through GChat, and then putting me on the spot. But no, I think we are probably too low. He is a guy that in the past of the starters, well, not like that, whoever's filled, like the Brandon Rush thing, who's filling in for Levine. But of those core guys, he's the least likely to maintain a solid minutes floor. But I agree that 32 minutes in our system is too low, and I will raise that, and I can just have you get off my back. And he's probably a solid, if not fantastic, play, just because I probably would still be a little bit worried about him playing all of those minutes in a given game. Dallas takes on Brooklyn. They're huge favorites, obviously. Brooklyn sucks. They're without Brook Lopez, which probably makes them suck more, though I'm not even positive how much better he makes that team. I mean, it'd be hard to make them worse, for sure. But Lopez is not going to play. Dallas is minus 11.5 coming in. Now, those guys are going to show up very high in our system because the multipliers you get playing against Brooklyn are just across the board great. How much are you worried about the blowout risk, with the idea that basically every Dallas starter, if they were to see their regular minutes, every Dallas starter is a pretty fantastic value. But with blowout risk kind of like looming over on a slate where no other game has anywhere close to like this kind of spread, how much are you worried about the blowout there?
Yeah, I'm pretty worried about the blowout, to be honest with you. I think, you know, Dallas is a team that will rest guys when things get kind of out of hand. Like Harrison Barnes played only 34 minutes in the OKC game, which actually was, I suspect, more in doubt than this game will wind up being tonight. So I'm concerned. And I think that you could still get away with, like, I don't know that I would want to play four of these guys in my cash game lineup, but if I had, like, Harrison Barnes rounding out my small forward position, I think I would feel comfortable with that. Some of the more speculative guys, like Wes Matthews, for instance, is a guy to me, just strikes me as the classic guy who will disappear completely if this game gets out of hand. His skill set primarily comes into play actually when the team is trailing and they need to catch back up, so I would not be nearly as comfortable playing him. I think Dirk is the same thing. He'll probably be the first one to lose minutes if the game gets out of hand. So I think Barnes is probably where I want to be. I could definitely see stacking these guys for a big tournament. I could consider playing Dirk. He's been excellent recently, and people might consider him as well. But yeah, by and large, I'm going to view this with a skeptical eye. As a tiebreaker, I'll probably go with guys who have a similar points per dollar projection who don't have the same risk involved.
Yeah, I think I'm there too. Barnes has had a really solid minutes floor. I mean, you don't want to see him play 30 minutes, but I went through the game log last night, and he has not played less than 32 minutes. He's played like less than 32 or 33 minutes like seven times over the course of the entire season, and that includes all different kinds of games. Now, some of that has to do with context. You know, they were without Dirk for a while. They have had other injury issues, so it's not exactly,
but it's kind of built into them, right, though? Like, he's kind of the most reliable guy, and so,
right,
you know, anything can happen. Matthews can easily just, like, come up a little bit gimpy and only play 21 minutes. Like, there's just a lot that can happen for these guys, so.
And Barnes is quite a bit. He's so versatile, too, like, just from a positional standpoint, that he can just play the three or the four, and they've made him of just such a huge part of their offense. Anyway,
he can defend the two through the four too. So, like, I think Barnes, yeah, he's definitely a part of the game plan in most matchups, in most game scripts.
And I agree with you that of the entire group, he is probably the safest considering the price. It's still only $6,000 on FanDuel. Brooklyn side, no thanks. They don't, you know, Jeremy Lin was something of a deal on DraftKings last time. That was in a decent matchup. Dallas is a terrible matchup for DFS. I mean, maybe you see Lin play a few more minutes now. I hate talking about the Nets. I'm moving on from that game.
Thank you.
Denver, probably the biggest piece of injury news outside of Vucevic, and this one actually might even be bigger than that, is whether or not Jokic is going to play. So Jokic was ruled out pretty late last game. He was ruled out well after, I think maybe like an hour, maybe even an hour and a half after lock. It was getting really close to game time, and it's with an illness. So it's not even like a, it's not even a real injury. It's just the NBA flu. This actually seems like more than the NBA flu. NBA flu is usually just one game, like I'm hungover. But when you're questionable for the next game, it actually could be like, you know, your tum-tum really does hurt, you know? The Jokic news. And also, it's actually two things. Well, this is so funny. It's Jokic, who has an illness, and it's Gallinari, who has vertigo. So these are two, there's non, you know, they're two, like, non necessarily injury related notes that are.
It sounds
going,
like when we used to run summer camp together and what the counselors would tell us on Sunday when they didn't want to go back out there and sleep in the cabins with the kids. Like, oh, your vertigo is acting up? That makes sense.
Oh, I ate some bad eggs, man, this morning. Oh, that's really crazy. It's really crazy that the bad egg experience correlated with the 14 beers you drank last night, too. Like, that is some kind of coincidence, but I'm definitely
really dizzy. Anyway, vertigo depends on my family.
I'm definitely sure it was the eggs, or like, yeah, that you just like couldn't sleep well in your bed last night. Jokic and Gallo will inform pretty much all of, I think, cash games if they were to not play. So they both sit again. Do you see Chandler and Plumlee as basically like not must starts, because I know you hate that word, but really close to like just basically must starts if those two guys both were to sit?
Yeah, I think both are excellent plays that both are to sit. You know, Mason Plumlee, Chandler is one of these guys who he can look as good a matchup as he wants and still disappear completely sometime. But I think Plumlee's contributions, if Jokic is out, are consistent and reliable enough that even on a bigger slate like this, a fast-paced matchup with Boston, I could see very happily rolling him out there. And I could play Chandler too, but Plumlee's a guy who I wouldn't have any reservations about, whereas Chandler I might.
Yeah, I think basically it's too hard to right now go through all the scenarios of what happens, because, like, you know, if they both sit, then you get Juancho Hernan Gomez. He started last game, but then, like, if one of them was back, that wouldn't be the case. And then you get more minutes from guys like Harris and Barton if they both sit. So it's really kind of too difficult right now to go through all the different possibilities of who plays and who doesn't. This is all just to say this is the piece of news that we're going to want to keep an eye on. I hope we get the news. I suspect if I were to guess right now, I say Jokic plays, Gallo doesn't, but that's just me guessing. Maybe vertigo is just such a weird thing. Like, I don't even, I've never had vertigo personally, so I don't know. I can't like, I can't say what exactly. Have you ever had vertigo?
No. Do you know anyone that had vertigo? I think I could think of one person who said they had vertigo in my entire multiple thousands of people that I've interacted with. So no, I have not had vertigo.
Okay, yeah, me neither. Last game,
I'll tell you if I do, by the way. That's not something, you don't need to check in with me back a year and see if I've had another vertigo experience.
Well, I'm wondering actually too, if like the next time we go to do a podcast, you just text me, be like, I don't know, man, I got a little vertigo going on here. I'm not going to be able to
anymore because now the joke is spoiled. So
I'm going to not be able to make that 9 o'clock start time.
Oh, by the way, real quick though, Horford on the other side of the ball.
I'm just like, the Celtics are too weird with their minutes. Like, oh, you know what? I can't believe I even met this. Isaiah Thomas basically is like the best player in the slate. I almost skipped past it. I almost skipped past
you
it.
You skipped the whole team. Yeah. So.
I did skip the whole team. Well, I actually think most of the team is I'm not really that interested in playing Horford now.
I mean, 32 minutes in each of his last three games. Great matchup, especially if Nokic is out. What's not to like?
Nokic, that's good. I just don't think that, one, he has the minutes upside to like really kind of pay off. I think there's better center value on the cheaper side between the three guys you mentioned in Biombo, Plumlee, and Zeller. Not necessarily that all of them are going to be in play, but one of those three will definitely be in play. The Celtics too often play matchups where Horford just will play 29 minutes and they'll bring like Olynyk or Drebko or someone like that in. I don't think he's fine. Don't get me wrong. And it is a good matchup for sure. I just don't think he has a ton of like huge upside necessarily. And that's just kind of my feeling on Horford. Maybe I've just been burned by Horford in the past. I will say the picture that I downloaded for the picks last night from AP Images was of Isaiah Thomas. That was for a good reason. I do think he's an excellent play tonight. Denver has been, and I can't believe I almost just skipped this whole entire thing because he's like basically the crux of the crux of the slate tonight. But Thomas, you know, he was living in that like 10-5 range on FanDuel for a while and basically was just out of play because he's going to have almost an impossible time paying that on a consistent basis. He also was running into some bad matchups here and there, but now the price is down to in that 9,000 range, 9,200 on FanDuel. Denver, I think, is the very worst in the league at defending point guards. So
they're second behind Brooklyn, but yeah, so six in one hand, as you like to say.
I don't know what that saying means, but I do think you see Thomas as a chalk play on a slate where there just aren't a ton of expensive guys that you can roll out there. The matchup is too good. It's not going to be lost on anybody how good of a matchup Thomas has here. 9,200 is just a totally fair price to play. I think the floor is high, and he is the one guy. Like, he's basically 35 minutes on lock for the Celtics. They'll play matchups here and there, and they'll kind of screw around with their rotations with lower minutes, but Thomas is the one of those guys that doesn't happen to. He plays 34 to 35 just about every single game, and this one, well, it doesn't have a line right now, but that's because there's too much injury news coming from the Denver side. Last game is Washington and Sacramento. I don't know if I'm wanting to go too much into this game. I just got confused there. I'm not going to cut it out, though. Washington, they're one of these teams where for a while they were playing their starters huge minutes because they had to, because the second unit stunk. But they made a trade to get Bogdanovich, and they got Jan Mahimny back. And that's actually made their second unit kind of decent. And it just made their team better in general. So I just don't see the huge upside you get on their starters anymore, considering they just don't have to play guys like Otto Porter 37 minutes or Gortat 37 minutes or even Markieff Morris. Do you get that same sense that like what they've improved their bench enough that they're like the starters just don't have to be out there for like, you know, the entire game anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the trend, certainly. And you know, unfortunately, we talked about this with several teams tonight, but they are all priced like that reality where they were playing high 30s minutes per game. And if they're not going to do that, they might be too expensive to a man. And that's kind of a bummer because they can be fun to play. And this matchup is at least decent. I mean, Sacramento's slowed it down considerably in the last couple years. They went from being kind of in the same conversation as the Lakers and Suns and teams like that to something quite a bit less right now. I guess Wall probably has the highest minute safety. Like, he doesn't seem to be affected. I mean, he does something so singularly different from the rest of the guys on his team that I guess that's probably pretty unsurprising. But Beal, 7,600 strikes me as too much. I mean, we called that out against Denver when he was 8,000. He was a huge disappointment there. So, I'm not seeing a ton to love, not from a player perspective, but just from a points per dollar perspective.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. And I just think that when teams get deeper and they just trust the guys coming off the bench just a little bit more, then you the prices the guys used to be when they had to play every single minute of the game are just no longer relevant, and I think that's what you see with Washington. The Kings side, they were blowing out the Spurs last game. Then they somehow allowed the Spurs, they were up like 20 or something like that at halftime, allowed the Spurs to get back in the game and ultimately win. We saw Lawson's minutes get dipped off a little bit, but he had been a guy that had been playing sort of like in that 33 to 34 minutes range pretty reasonably. He might be a value. Do you trust this Kings team at all? Like, in terms of like how they're, it seems like they've gone into the mostly the mode of everyone's just going to kind of play under 30 minutes, and that's going to be how we try to tank away the rest of the season to get a good draft pick. Is that kind of how you view the Kings, or do you think there's value to be had here?
No, that's kind of how I view the Kings. It's really annoying too, because some of these guys would be really exciting DFS plays if they could play more consistently. But yeah, Lawson, I mean, he's done it recently. And I could see, by the way, some of these guys being really excellent big tournament plays. Lawson definitely falls into that category. I mean, he's probably got 7x, 8x upside if he were to get just, you know, on the other side of the standard deviation of the minutes. But it's really hard to say what their plan is, which is to say, I think their plan is just to be bad as well. Hield, they trade for Hield. He goes from 26 minutes. Now he can't find any spot in the rotation, so not looking like excellent return so far there. Aflalo is always coming and going. Kind of a Dante Cunningham all-star guy in his own right. Yeah, not a lot to love here.
Yeah, Tyreke Evans, they don't really want to play more than 23 to 24 minutes at the most. Like, he would be an interesting play if he could just play, but none of these guys play. Cauley Stein is the same way. If any of these guys all of a sudden just got into real starters minutes, we'd really be looking at something, but that's just not going to be the case, and I don't suspect it changes anytime soon. All right, I think we covered it here today. You're going to want to take a look at and keep abreast of all the injury news that's coming out today. I'm sure there'll be a lot on a Friday. There are some things hanging out there. I'm going to jump on with Chris Terrell, talk a little bit of NASCAR. Buddy, enjoy your Friday basketball.
Ooh. Don't worry, I will.